because it's not about Hazrat Isa's birth. Because they've proven that Hazrat Isa was not born anywhere around that time. He was born like in August or September or sometime around that time. So this holiday doesn't have anything to do with that. It's a pagan holiday that was before. And they wanted to bring these pagans and join them in. And, I mean, you can do the research, but they want these pagans to become Christians. So, okay, you can keep your holiday. But instead of calling it whatever pagan holiday it is, we're going to call it, you know, the birth of Jesus. And so then, you know, it's an easy way that we can celebrate this and so on and so forth. And this is why when you like watch like around Christmas time, you'll see all the commercials and the TV, radio, everything. It's all this stuff, but you know, you never hear anything about Prophet Isa. You never hear anything about Jesus. You hear shopping, sale, you know, 50% off, buy this, buy it now. Hurry, rush, get in early, it's open at 5 a.m. This is what you hear. Does that have anything to do with, you know, happy holidays? Does that have anything to do with Christmas? I don't hear the word church, I don't hear the word Christmas, because it doesn't actually have anything to do with that. Tree, all this stuff, this was like all part of the, you know, pagan custom. So, basically, even despite that, he would send, the Imam Khomeini would send the Christmas card to the Vatican, congratulating them, you know, on this holiday that they celebrate as the birth of Prophet Isa. And this kind of gesture, it's better gesture than what some people think and what you see a lot of Muslims doing, and that's a compromise mode where they think that, well, we want to get non-Muslims to like us or to understand us, so we're going to go celebrate Christmas too, you know, which is completely wrong. I mean, this has nothing to do with Prophet Isa even. You know, it's not even a true Christian holiday. You know, if you go on YouTube and you Google like Christians who don't celebrate Christmas, there's a whole or lots of organizations, because they like there's some people who really like they're true Christians and they don't they know that this is not a Christian holiday actually. So anyway, it's but still it was a gesture. But the way that he, you know, put it like that, it was a one way that he could, you know, show his kindness and, you know, the character of the proper portrayal of Islam. Somebody's sleeping.
No, maybe.
It's past his bedtime.
Can you tell us more background information about yourself?
Just from November.
So I was originally from Philadelphia, and I guess I started with my parents really because they have a lot of influence on a lot of things. But my mother comes from a Catholic background. Like my great grandmother was like the oldest person at her church or something. Like since the church was made, she was always at this one church. And my grandmother was very devout Catholics. And my father also came from a Christian family. And basically after I mean, they always had this mentality about seeking the truth. I guess that's kind of like also like what I mentioned about like not compromising. That's that a lot of people out there, they want to know the truth and they want to know what's like about Islam. They have questions, and that's why it's important for us to maintain, not to compromise, not to change from being true Muslims. Because if they come to us and we've changed and we've become like them, then I mean, obviously they're not going to learn anything from us. So they always had these questions, and they couldn't get answers from, you know, the churches and things like that, because it's more like a mentality to just follow, you know, just like a herd of sheep, you just go. Don't ask questions about why stuff doesn't make sense. How can there be Father, Son, and Holy Ghost? Don't ask these questions. It's just the way it is. You know, Islam, on the other hand, is not like that. Islam says you can question, ask any question. You want to ask why God exists, ask why God exists. And you want to ask why God can be too, you can ask that question. You can ask any question because in Islam there's an answer. You know, this is the one fundamental difference. You know, this is like the same way that, you know, in the Quran it says, like, you know, tells people to bring a verse like the Quran or two verses like the Quran. The Quran is challenging people because it knows it's the truth. So they began to learn about, they always had kind of questions and things like that, but they really, during the time of Malcolm X, when he joined the Nation of Islam, and he was like the spokesperson for the Nation of Islam, spreading Islam. And even though they were not necessarily Muslims, Orthodox Muslims, they had some version of Islam and some truths. And based on that, the basic thing that Islam is teaching, that, you know, you have to be fair and treat everyone fairly, basically. Coming in a society where especially African Americans were mistreated, you know, even after slavery, these type of things. So it wasn't a society where this, the democracy, as they call it, even existed, you know. So people, when they feel oppressed, especially, they want justice, you know. We feel oppressed about, like you mentioned, like even about the way we're portrayed, how people talk about Muslims. So we want to feel some kind of justice, like we don't want to see that. So speaking out against those kinds of, all kinds of injustices was, you know, basically the underlining, you know, factor for the Nation of Islam. That African Americans were oppressed, and so now they have a right to get even, or get justice, rather. Anyway, this all about, you know, the Nation of Islam, this, I think it really prompted them to learn about Islam. It's the first time really Islam is being talked about all the time, and Malcolm X being a spokesperson, he's a good speaker, and so he was always on TV and always on these other channels and radio and things like that. So they began to research and learn. And then especially when Malcolm X left the Nation of Islam, he went to make Hajj. And this was another changing point. And I guess what they saw in Malcolm X was the same thing that they had in themselves, was that they were always seeking what's true. They were always seeking something that's true. This is not truth, let me find the truth. This is more true. They're constantly seeking something that's true. Not seeking something that's comfortable, or just something that I like, or it fits my lifestyle. They wanted the truth. Just like when Malcolm X goes to Hajj and he sees that, because one of the things that they used to say to the Nation of Islam, they would say white people are the devil. Well, there are a lot of white people who did devilish things and did evil things, especially to African American. But you can't obviously, you know, stereotype a whole nationality, and that's not Islamic. And Islam doesn't really preach nationalism. And so when he went to Hajj and he saw, you know, Islam in its true form, you know, one of the things that Hajj really symbolizes is Islamic diversity. And you have people coming from all over the world. You know, for example, when everyone shaves their heads, so everyone looks the same, you know, kind of, everyone's wearing the same kind of clothes. It's all kind of symbolic. And so experiencing these type of things has made him kind of prompt to learn more about Islam himself. And he became, and this is when my parents became Sunni Muslims. And then around the time of the Islamic Revolution of Iran and Imam Khomeini, when he was speaking about, you know, this confronting all the oppression that, you know, a lot of these Western states have done and things like that, and getting rid of the tyranny of the Shah, and really uplifting Islam. This is when they begin to learn about, you know, Shia Islam. There were some friends who also, you know, really kind of encouraged the questioning there from Iran about to what other people think. I mean, we live in a society where, like, it's an individualist society. Like, the individual is more important than the whole society. Like, it kind of encourages you to do whatever you want, you know, like. This is why, like, if you were in Pakistan or in Iran right now or something, and somebody walked down the street with green hair, you'd probably look at them twice, like, what is wrong with this person? But if you see that here, you probably wouldn't even care. It's, well, some weird guy, you know, whatever. So, I mean, here we kind of have, like, a mentality where people, they kind of don't care a lot, on one hand, about, you know, other people or what their beliefs are and things like that. That kind of translates also into, you know, family life and things. And I can't say that, I mean, they definitely, I mean, in some ways their family is affected by that, because I mean, in some ways they do have like some concerns or some things come up, but I mean, it's not like, you know, okay, you know, a big deal, you're Muslim now and things like that. They know that as Muslims, we don't eat, for example, we don't eat halal meat, meat that's not to be here or anything like that. They won't offer us on halal meat, you know, if we're at their home or something. So, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Like, if you don't compromise yourself, people will accommodate you, you know, and they'll respect you for that, for whatever it is that you believe. They make people respect, in our society, people have to respect people who have the greatest, weirdest beliefs, you know. They could be Satanists, they're homosexual, it doesn't matter. The society kind of tries to force people to respect them. And that's okay, and they can be proud about, you know, whatever kind of belief they have, actually. And they can walk proudly and with their head high, and people are kind of forced to respect them, you know. But they're not compromising, even their own beliefs, wrong or not, they're not compromising themselves. So we kind of have to have the same mentality to uphold, you know, what we believe and share that with other people with the hope that they will, you know, learn. I mean, I know that for a fact that, I mean, maybe from initially till now, like my aunts and uncles, maybe they knew nothing about Islam, but now they know a little bit about Islam, at least, from dealing with us, just basic things, what we eat, what we don't eat, that we pray and things like that. So that's a good, you know, progression in that regard.
How long did you stay in Kobe?
Well, altogether, probably it was about 11 years. I mean, if you count the years that I was there when I was first there, when my parents were there and I was small. But I was just really, really small. I was like 4 or 5 years old, I guess. But altogether, it was about 11 years. In the Hosa and Qom, I was studying for about 6.5, 7 years.
Now it's your turn, I think, to ask questions.
Topics or anything, concerns, anything you
want to
talk about?
I have a question, Milana. Preparing for the Zuhur of Imam Ahmed, who is Islam. You know, if I guess one thought that I always have is, you know, there's just the limits. There's so many limits, you know, that we have. Time and, you know, money and, you know, just resources, just, you know, we're so limited. And so we have to, I think, prioritize. And so in preparing and waiting, what should be the priorities? And then also, are there different priorities individually and then like together as a community?
Absolutely. That's a good question. I mean, that one of the most important things is, you know, as Hadith mentioned, that the best action is awaiting the Imam, but obviously that action is not, it's a proactive waiting, you know, so there's things and work to be done and things like that. But, yes, I mean the priority is going to obviously first be each person working on themselves. You know, I mean, we cannot stress that enough. Yes, there's things that the communities have to do as a whole also, but we have to also remember that the community is made up of individuals. You know, and solid, you know, functioning community is going to be based on individuals who are doing what they're supposed to do. You know, it's a team, you know. If it's a game or something like that and one person is playing good and nobody else is playing good, the team probably going to lose. You know, if it's if everyone's playing good, everyone's playing together, everyone's sharing the ball, you know, everyone's passing, shooting, all that team's got a chance, you know, because everyone's doing their part. You know, if you look at, like, if you ever watch sports or basketball, like I used to always watch and play basketball, then, you know, like, if you ever saw, like, Michael Jordan's team, like, everybody wasn't a superstar, but everyone was doing something that they were supposed to be doing good. There was one person who could always shoot 3 points. Really good. One person was always getting rebounds, you know. And then one person, so they had, like, people that were filling their roles. Like, Scottie Pippen would come and just do, like, everything else. And did all the dirty work. And Michael Jordan would get all the credit. No, Michael Jordan would do his, you know, thing, too. But basically, there was roles to be filled, and everybody was playing their part as a team. So the team was functioning like really well. But if each, if individually each person wasn't doing what the best thing what they could do, then obviously it wouldn't be any good. So we have like, as individuals, the priorities that each person has to first work on their own game is to kind of really become better themselves. So that means that that's where the priority is going to lie. But that means that we have to first of all identify what the issues are that we have ourselves. It's like our spiritual development, but it's not going to be the same necessarily for each person. Okay, you know, one person may struggle with anger, where another person may not have that much of a problem with that. One person may struggle with, loving money too much, but another person may not have a problem with that. So we have to identify, we have to be self-aware to know what are our own issues. Identify the issues, and then we have to work on those things. And as we do that, then we become better individuals, you know, ready individuals for the imam. The imam needs people who know the religion, right? The people who understand the religion. It's a really basic thing. And you'd be surprised how many people, you know, or say they're Muslim, they never read the Quran at one time, you know. They don't know very, very basic things about their religion. You know, I mean, there's things about the religion which... Okay, it's like two ways. But if there's things that pertain to you that you need to know, you either know them or you don't know them. But if you don't know them, and you didn't learn them and you had the opportunity to, then you're still going to be held accountable for those type of things. So let's say, like, for example, I don't know that, the rulings or what I should do when it comes to how I pray, if I make a mistake praying, what I'm supposed to do. If I don't know that and I had the ability to learn, you know, there's one person who he doesn't know, he dies, you know, maybe Allah's going to forgive him for things that he forgets or for things that he acts by and all of these type of things. This is what really, each person, once they do this, then you put a group of people together who are really sincere individuals who worked on themselves. The sky's the limit, really, for them. You know, they can achieve, you know, great, 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 you know, things. And if you see, like, you know, ulama, that they're working together, coming together, if they've reached some level and they work together, it's going to be much greater than if two people are working together, but they have a whole lot of internal issues and problems, and everybody's doing something different. You know, so the priority is definitely going to be like each person working on themselves. That's a big job. And that's why the Prophet called it the great jihad. You know, that's the war. You know, the real holy war is to, you know, to fight your own nafs, your own ego, your own lust, your own desire to overcome these things. This is the real battle. You know, you're the battlefield. So to overcome these things is to become successful, and that's where the community can really function. But it doesn't mean that while I'm working on myself, I say, well, I have to neglect the community until I become a perfect person, because that might take a long time. Right? So that means that there are still things that we can do as a community as a whole, and one of the most important things, I mean, at the intizar and waiting the imam, one of the most important things the community to just be to network and to just be engaged with the communities to work together. Too much we find that, especially in Shia communities, not only do Shia communities are not interactive with one another, you know, that this community doesn't know what's going on at the community right across, you know, or in the next city, you're not too far, but they have no idea what's going on a broader scale with communities all across America. And we're all facing the same problems. It's the same issues. Most communities, they have similar problems, similar issues. You know, we don't network. We're not in touch with them. So first of all, the really, really, really lowest basic thing is just to be aware, self-awareness, as for ourselves. And then as a community, to be self-aware that what's going on with other communities, you know. There's issues in other communities. They found a way to resolve this issue, and everyone else, they don't know, you know, what they still have the same issue, or there's a solution, you know. But because we're not in touch, you know, then we don't know. You know, so there's a lot of things that as a community, I'll give you one example of what I'm talking about specifically to get an idea of what I mean. But on the broader scale as a community, why the self-awareness, even as a community, the community being aware is important. One part of that awareness is to know what's going on in other places. Like, for example, there's always this issue in a lot of communities, Shia communities, where during Muharram, there's no has seen as any Qasida and everything like that, and it's always in Urdu or in Farsi or in Arabic. And it's, there's a lot of people who don't understand if it's a mixed community, which a lot of communities are nowadays, there's always going to be some people who don't understand. So then what happens? You know, some people just don't benefit from that. It could be the most beautiful thing, but they're not going to benefit. Okay? So what should we do about this? Well, one community, they found that it was very useful that they would put two screens, one on the sister side, one on the brother's side, and they would create beforehand as a PowerPoint presentation or something, and they would, you know, the person, let's say they're coming, they're going to do their matem or noha in Urdu. They would have the Urdu, the transliteration, and the translation. So even if I don't understand Urdu, I can appreciate what's going on and I can participate. See, this is one of the things that helps a community to grow together. But this is one place, they found the solution and they're working, and it's been working great for them. But there's thousands of other places who don't know about this, and this is, goes back to that being aware as a community, being in touch with other communities. We don't have to reinvent the wheel, you know? Someone already figured out what the wheel is. I don't have to sit and figure out, what am I going to do? I need something that's round. No, I don't have to reinvent the wheel. Someone figured it out, okay, let's utilize the same, you know, the things that are going on. So that awareness as a community and self-awareness are, you know, I would say the most important things, you know, to focus on.
Sharma.
He called me.
Well, when you were, mentioning that, it brought something to my mind that I'm a high school teacher, and so, you know, I see, deal with teenagers every day, and then with Muslim teenagers and youth, like at the Sunday school, and you know, the youth who are at the center, the impression that I get from them, and y'all correct me if I'm wrong, because I might just be wrong about this, is that I get the impression when I see them interacting with one another that that they don't interact, I think, as like dealing with their issues as Muslims, right? Like interacting with their peers. This is, and like I said, please correct me if I'm wrong. But you talk about like the sort of issues that come about, in life, like that other people would. But just like, for instance, I don't know, maybe if it's just not cool to talk about, you know, like Islam and, you know, and issues that might arise from that. But like in the networking sense, like if the youth talk to one another about the issues that they had in struggling, you know, with their nafs, if they talked about that, then they can get solutions from one another, you know, as far as that's concerned, just like communities could, you know. But that would require, I think, overcoming a sort of comfort, like there's maybe a barrier there, you know, to actually start talking about something serious rather than just, you know, joking around all the time, you know, and that kind of thing. Maybe it's just the context that I see is, you know, if it's like a group of friends, they're never going to talk about that. Or
maybe. I mean, do you agree with that? Do you guys agree with that?
Well, just the other day, we were talking about, remember when we were in that circle at the Shurak, we were talking about Moment Center's future.
Yeah.
Moment Center's what?
Future.
Oh, future.
And just the other day, we were talking about how how we're gonna fill in the roles.
Okay, so it goes.
for the people that are having a hard moment in right now.
Okay,
and
so
some were saying, you know, that they won't be coming back.
Look.
And this and that.
Yeah.
And some were saying,
and then turn right on the pipeline.
Yeah, we're going to be the ones that are,
yeah,
you know, going to be managing the Moment Center
and
stuff like that.
The streets, like, you know,
so, I mean, we have our, we have our moments where we talk about
right,
our center and our problem. I mean, we have our moments that, he's right, we do have, like, most of the time we are, you know, we have other topics on our minds and stuff. But, I mean, like, all of us grew up here, so, I mean, I don't think it would be right if we didn't talk about it.
It's not really like awkward or like not cool to talk about it.
Yeah, because
I mean, like, it just never comes to our mind to like talk about it. I don't know why. It's
like
it's something wrong, but like we should. Like you'll get like once in a while you'll have like an Islamic discussion.
Someone else coming?
Yeah, but I don't think it has anything to do with like
coolness or
coolness.
Yeah, like I mean we all grew up together. I mean, we can really talk about anything.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like I said, once in a while, the topic will come up about anything. But, yeah, I mean, it's really just more of a teenager perspective of everything. So, I mean, we don't really get into all the politics and all that of it, but, yeah.
Well, it seems like, I mean, it's, I mean, also one, something to keep in mind, just in general, though, is that, over the course of time, you know, people are really, like, I mean, if you go, like, back to, like, probably, I mean, as far as you go back, the younger people were, that's, when they were doing things like much taking care of families, you know, having important discussions, all this type of thing. And over the course of time, it's been like, you know, these responsibilities have gone less and less, where I don't think that it's because younger people don't have the ability. I think that their minds are just as sharp or just as bright, if not better than some older people with a broader perspective or more open to suggestion and these type of thing. But it seems like, you know, it's just the way that the societies are. I mean, we live in a society where, you know, you can't do certain things till you're 16 or till you're 18 or till you're, you know, 20 something, things like that. So because of that, the way that our societies are set up, people are used to not really having responsibilities until they get a lot older. So they don't talk about things that really pertain to a lot of responsibilities until they get into those roles where they're filling those roles, actually. But the reality is that, I mean, as Muslims, we don't have to really wait till, you know, we reach this, you know, till we're 25 or something to become, you know, responsible, you know, or important and things like that. How come, you know, we can have imams and prophets who are like kids, you know, and they were so responsible. You know, they were imams and prophets, and they were just... So this is, I mean, this goes to show us that, like, we all can have this potential like that from really young ages to be able to be influential and to be leaders and everything like that and to talk about those type of things. It kind of, to me, I think it's like, it's just not like, it doesn't come, you know, just, it's not second nature that, you know, to think about or talk about these type of topics or things like that. Because it's kind of like, oh, I'll talk about that or think about it more. It'll come naturally, you know, as you get older. It will come naturally. But it shouldn't really, like, stop, you know, the youth from talking about or thinking about or, you know, discussing these things. I mean, I, for one, I really believe that, you know, roles in leadership should really be given to the youth, you know, at young ages, you know, because you, why do we have to wait till we become, everybody has to wait for so many, I mean, it's like really, it's exactly like school itself. I mean, the way the system is set up, it's set up in such a way that it takes this period of time because they feel like people are not responsible enough till they're 17 or 18 or whenever they're going to graduate. That's the way it's, the reason why it's set up like that.
Here are they.
But there is like this
You hit it when you were drinking water.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, scoot up a little bit.
Yeah, there's this one book that talks about how the school system was set up in the way that it was so that it could, you know, occupy time, you know, for a young person so that they won't get into trouble or things like that and that they'll be busy. And that's definitely has some truth because you can find people who go to homeschool or things like that and they can finish all of high school in like 1 year. Or, you know, a lot of other people who, I mean, it's not necessary for it to be as long as it is, but it's made like that because they don't want kids to just be like 14-year-olds so all be graduated high school and just, they're going to start trouble. You know? So that's why that it really is the way that it is. So it's not that, you know, it's not the mind or their denial. It's just that I think that people have just gotten used to it being like that. But people should start to, I mean, youth especially, should start to think and talk about these things. Because you talk about it and youth have really great ideas, you know, and innovative ideas. And you can share those type of things and help to, you know, come up with better solutions and, you know, to, you know, helping the Muslim community as a whole. You know, I mean, on one hand, there's the topics about, you know, the community and helping the community. Also, those same as just as important the topics about self-building and, you know, self-awareness and things like that. We don't really talk about those, you know, at all as much, but as we should. But, I mean, they're just as important because part of being able to be influential is to be able to manage responsibility. How do I do that? Well, I have to be able to manage myself first. So, you know, managing like different self issues. I mean, yeah, you don't see people sitting around talking about, you know, how do I get rid of, you know, anger? You know, well, what did you do to get rid of anger? I did this method. Well, what did you do? You don't see people talking about that. But, I mean, just, it is actually something important. I mean, it may be looked at as something small, but if someone's not really, you know, cleanse their self and they don't have really good character, then all that other responsibilities and all those other things that they want to do, is going to be kind of jeopardized by, you know, their own inner self.
Shana. Muhammad wa ali Muhammad salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Shana.